Well, say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Chaf Ches. We're going to pick up at the Mishnah. Mishnah on Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. So the Gemara's and the Shir this morning is sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Martyr in memory of Mr. Martyr's father, Rafael Ben Eliezer HaKohen. We hope that in the merits of our Talmud Torah's Neshama will have an Aliyah. All right, so we'll say, so the Mishnah says the following. The Mishnah says, Am Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov. Rabbi Zechariah, and I will say, Katsav literally means a butcher. So Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov, ben the butcher, the son of the butcher, said the following. Hamon Azem, I will say, it's still a continuation of our previous discussions. Hamon Azem means, I swear by this place being the Beis HaMikdash. I swear on the Beis HaMikdash, Lo Zaza Yada mitoch yadi. So Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov was testifying about his wife. Remember, Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov lives through the siege on Yerushalayim, and he testifies that during that siege, his wife's hand never left his own. The idea over here being that what? The idea over here being that he's testifying that she was not violated by her captors. Now remember, Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov was also a Kohen. See, he testifies that his wife was with him the entire time during the siege, and she was not violated by her captors. So from the time that the idolaters entered Jerusalem until they left, Amrlo, they said to Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov, Ein Adam Meyid al Atzmo. A person cannot go ahead and testify about himself. And Rabbosai, now we saw that already. We saw this already in the last Sugin, last Gemara. The Gemara quoted the Braisa that said that the same way that a woman is not believed just to simply say that she was not violated, so too her husband is not believed either. So here the Gemara, the Mishnah gives a real life story of this, of Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov, who testifies about his own wife, but yet again, Lemaisa was not believed. So the Gemara says the following, Tana. The Afal Pikein, and even though again he was not believed to testify about his wife, Yichad La Bayis Bechatzero. Ultimately, he so remember. We'll say because Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov was not believed about his wife, he had to divorce her. He was a kohen. He was not permitted to remain married to her. But what he did was he set up. She lived in the same courtyard as Rabbi Zechariah ben HaKosov. They lived in the same courtyard. Ukeshi yotza, and when she would leave the courtyard, yotza barosh paneha. Ukeshi nichneses besof paneha. When she would leave the courtyard, so she would leave in front of all of her children, and when she would enter the courtyard, she would enter after all of her children. I'll say the idea over here is she avoided yichud with her husband, with her ex-husband. So the way she avoided yichud with her ex-husband is when she left, she would leave before the kids, and then the kids would leave afterwards. And when she would come back, the kids would come in first to the courtyard and then her afterwards to avoid any issue of yichud. So the Gemara says, Baya Abaye, asked the Kasha, Mahu la'asos begrushakein. What is the halacha? Can one go ahead and set up this same system with a regular grusha, with a regular case of a divorcee? Rashi says, begrusha, kohen shegirish es ishtu. So let's say not a shvuya case, not a captive case, but a kohen divorces his wife. Is he permitted to live in the same courtyard as her after they go out and get divorced? Oh, Dilma, so the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Malas came Brugushkin, Hassan Hudib Shvuya Kelu. So maybe it's only a leniency by Shvuya Aval Hachalo, but in a case of a regular divorce, no. Oh, Dilma Loshna, or perhaps it does no distinction. And the same way you could do it in Shvuya, you could do it in a case of Grusha as well. Tashma, so the Gemara quotes a Braisa, this Sanya, Hamagarish as Ishto, if a man divorces his wife, Lo Tinase Bishkunaso. Rabbi say, if she gets remarried, she may not live with her new husband in the same shchuna, in the same neighborhood as her ex-husband. Rashi says over here, why not? Lo tinase b'shchunaso, l'fi shemakira b'remizosav v'krisosav, shemayavau l'deaver, literally translated, because they recognize one another's intimate gestures, and they may come to be intimate with one another again. There's a concern that if a woman is remarried, and she lives now in the same neighborhood as her ex-husband, that they may be intimate with one another afterwards. Therefore, once the woman remarries, she may not go ahead and live in the same neighborhood as her ex-husband. Top of Chavches, Vimhaya Kohen. But if her ex-husband was a Kohen, Lo Tidor Ima B'Mavui, she may not go ahead and live with him in the same Mavui. The idea, so Kedrashi, Vimhaya Kohen, Afilu Lo Nises. Ultimately, again, even if she was a divorcee of a Kohen, which means Rabbi Sari, remember, see, the idea that the Bryce is making is like this. This prohibition of a woman living in the same neighborhood as her ex-husband is only once she's been remarried, because now there's an isser between her and her ex-husband. Before she gets married, we don't really care where she lives. Why? Because technically speaking, if he wants to remarry her, he can remarry her. But the ex-wife of a Kohen is already ushered him the moment he divorced her. He may not remarry her if he has a change of heart. Therefore, the Bryce says once they get divorced, she should not live in the same neighborhood as him. And if it was a small village, they said the small village has the same status as a neighborhood, and therefore the Maisa, they should not live in the same small village. So I will say, you see from here what? You see from here that there was a special leniency made by Shvuya. Special leniency made by the captive, that because Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav, because it's not unique to Zechariah ben Akatzav, it's anyone. Because if a Kohen has to divorce his wife because of the chashash that she was violated by her captors, there's a leniency in place that they're permitted to live within the same neighborhood. But that leniency does not apply in other cases. So what comes out over here is that Lamaisa, again, if a Kohen divorces his wife, even before she remarries, they may not live in the same neighborhood with one another, lest they come to be intimate with one another. If the Yisrael divorces his wife, so the only time there's a prohibition for them to live in the same neighborhood is when? Once she gets remarried. But before she's been before she's remarried, once they're divorced, there's no prohibition upon them to live in the same neighborhood. So we'll have to discuss how large a shchuna is. Obviously, we'll say these halachos are a little bit more complicated because lemaisa, again, what's the definition of a shchuna? Like, is Baltimore a shchuna or not? So we'll see this sugya mirat Hashem in Gittin. We'll get into the details of it.
It's stricter if he's a Kohen because she can't live in Mavli. Is a Mavli smaller than a shchuna?
So a Mavli would be smaller than a shchuna. No, because the same halacha would be even by a shchuna. The idea is the Kohen, we'll say again, we're not going to get into now the details of how large these areas now because it's not our sugya, but the idea, just suffice it for your purposes, for our learning purposes today, is that a Kohen is not permitted to live in the same area as his divorcee even before she goes in and gets remarried. So, minitchem ipnei mi. Who is displaced in front of who? So we'll say, so now the shayla is, okay, so now we've established that, let's say again, whether if it's the wife of Yisrael, ex-wife of Yisrael, if she gets remarried, they can't live in the same neighborhood, or again, if it's the wife of a Kohen, even before she gets married, they can't live in the same neighborhood. So who gets displaced in front of who? Tashma, desanya, he nitchis mipanav, ve'en hu nitcha mipaneha. So the Braisa says, she is displaced because of him, and he is not displaced because of her. However, so I'll say that's in general. So in general, the obligation is upon her to move. We'll see why that is. Ve'im haisa chatzer shela, hu nitcha mipaneha. But obviously, if it's her chatzer, then of course he's the one who has to move. Ibailahu, haisa chatzer shel shnei emahu. What happens if it was jointly owned property? Right, jointly owned marital property or joint, right? That lamaisa, again, they both own it. Who has to leave? So tashma, he nitchis mipanav. So the Braisa says, so now the Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa says, she has to relocate. So am I asking, you know, when the Braisa says, I'm sorry? Not if she had property beforehand. Let's say they invested in real estate together prior to marriage. So what's the halacha? So Bamai asks, so now the Gemara quotes a Braisa. And the Braisa simply says, he nitchis mipanav, she has to relocate. So the Gemara says, Bamai askinan, what is that case? If you want to say it's a case of his chatzer, so pshita, then obviously she has to relocate. So maybe you'll say it's her chatzer. So if that's the case, so that's not true, because if it's her chatzer, we establish that what? That she has to relocate. Excuse me, if it's her chatzer, we've established that he has to relocate. So we'll say, so what's the Bryce's case where it says that she has to relocate? Meaning again, so far, we're assuming there's only two possibilities. If it's his chatzer, we understand that she has to relocate. If it's her chatzer, then she doesn't have to relocate. He has to relocate. So what's the case where the Braisa says, where the Braisa feels compelled to rule that she has to relocate? The Gemara says, Elalav ki hai gavna. Or rather, it must be what case? It must be a case of jointly owned property. Then in the case of jointly owned property, so she has to relocate instead of him. So the Gemara says, well, how do you know? Dilma da'agar maker. So maybe the case of where the Braisa says she has to relocate is where we're about to say. They're both renters. So if they're both renters, meaning neither of them own, then the Braisa says that she has to relocate. So therefore, again, that Braisa the Gemara quoted was inconclusive. So my havi Allah. So at the end of the day, what is the halacha? What's the meaning? So now what we've established is, if he's the owner of the chatzar, obviously she has to relocate. If she's the owner of the chatzar, obviously he has to relocate. What if it's jointly owned property? Who has to relocate? Listen to this. So what's the halacha? Tashma. So the Gemara says, I'll quote you from a pasuk. Hine Hashem. Hine Hashem metal telecha. So I say, this is the pasuk in Yesheo. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking about the punishments that he's going to visit upon Klal Yisrael. And he says to Klal Yisrael, I'm going to cause you to wander like the wanderings of a man. Then I will say, now, what do we see from here? Va'amarav, tiltulei digavra, kashin midi isisa. The wanderings of a man are more difficult than a woman. And I will say, now, what's interesting over here, and I would have thought actually a little bit opposite, but what's interesting over here, Rav seems to say that apparently, men have much greater difficulty adjusting to new circumstances. And therefore, the Navi says to Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to banish you, and you're going to wander like a man wanders. And just like a man has difficulty finding his bearings in new situations, that's going to be like the wanderings of Klal Yisrael. So Rav said, based on this, or this is what the Brice is quoting, Rav said, based on this, so because, again, uprooting and relocating is more traumatic for the man, therefore, Lemaisa, again, when someone has to move, the halacha is that it is the woman who moves instead of the man. Now, we'll say, remember, again, that's only in one specific case, or I should say two specific cases. Either a case that perhaps where they're both renters, or in the case of jointly owned property. But obviously, in the case where the chatzar is hers, then in that case, everyone agrees that he's going to have to relocate instead of her. Ten Rabbanan. Lavehemeno b'nechse aviha. Einan efra'as ela ayideacha. So we'll say, similarly, now, once we're in this sugya, so now, we'll say, we're talking about conduct between husband and wife, or ex-husband and ex-wife, after they have divorced. So let's say, again, he borrowed money from her, from the property of her father. Rashi says, b'nechse aviha, shaya b'yada nechse melog, o b'koin shegiris is ishto kamari. So let's say he borrowed money from her. I will say, this could even be during marriage. See, he borrowed money from her. He borrowed money against her nichsei melug. Again, remember, we spoke about nichsei melug. Nichsei melug is property that she brings into the marriage that the husband guarantees the property. Guarantees the property. So ultimately, again, now he has to pay her back. So this is talking about Rashi. This is talking about a Kohen who divorced his wife. So he's not permitted to remarry her. In an efras ela ayat de'acher. So we don't permit him to repay her back directly. Rather, he has to repay her through an intermediary. Because the concern over here is what? We try to limit as much contact as possible between ex-husband and ex-wife out of concern that what? There's a bond. So remember again, especially in these Shvuya cases, not every divorce is bad. Not every divorce is strong. Sometimes, as you see over here in this case of Shvuya, you could have people who love each other very much, but because of circumstances, must terminate their marriage. As such, says the Gemara, in situations like that, we take as much precautions as possible to limit interactions between ex-husband and ex-wife so as to ensure that no intimacy occurs. And Rav Sheshes said, if this ex-husband and ex-wife show up in Beis Din together, lo mizdakinan luhu, we do not pay attention to their claim, meaning it's inappropriate for them to adjudicate their cases together, and therefore if they show up in Beis Din together, we do not adjudicate their claim. Rav Papa says, shamuti mishamtinan luhu, if they show up in Beis Din together, we're going to excommunicate them. And I will say, now again, the Marashah comments that this might be a little bit of hyperbole, but the idea over here is that we do not let them adjudicate their cases directly. We limit interaction between them. Rav Huna Bered Rav Yehoshua Amar Nugudi Nami Menagdinan. We'll give them lashes because it's inappropriate for them to interact with one another. Am Rav Nachman Tana Be'evor Abasi. Rav Nachman said, he quoted in Evor Abasi, Evor Abasi is also known as Meseches Smachos. So what does Meseches Smachos talk about? Hilchos Avelos, right? Interestingly enough, we don't want to label a Masechta, Maseches Avelos. So you have Maseches Smachos, right? Masechta of happy tidings. So in Evor Abasi, it says, Medar Mamurim, when is this true that we have to limit interaction between the husband and the ex-wife? And I will say, again, I want to be clear. This is only talking about, this is talking about specifically the case of the Kohen who divorced his wife. who divorced his wife. So in this case over here, remember that she is off limits to him the moment that they divorce, even before she remarries. So when is this true that we have to place these barriers in their interaction? That's only when he divorced her from Nisuin. But if he divorced her from Erusin, and let's say again, going back to the case where he borrowed money, he can go ahead and repay her directly. Why? She'en libo gaspa. Because I will say there's not such a connection. There's not such a connection that I will say. Now, the idea behind that is because during Erusin, they haven't lived together, so there's no physical bond. So because there's no physical bond, there's no real intimate connection. And therefore, by definition, we're not concerned that interaction will lead to intimacy. But if they were divorced from Nisuin, where there was an intimate bond forged between the two of them, that's when we are concerned. That's when we want to limit interaction out of fear that it may lead to intimacy. So Gemara tells the story. So there was a particular man and woman who were divorced from Erusin, who came before Rava. Yosef Rav Ada Bar Masna Kamei, Uki Rava Shlucha Bein Sayhu. And Rava ordered that a shaliach, that an intermediary, go ahead and be established between the ex-wife and ex-husband. I, the Gemara, said, "Only Rav Ada Bar Masna." So Rav Ada Bar Masna said, "Then Va'amar Rav Nachman b'tanu be'evor abasi." But yet, so now Rav Ada Bar Masna said to Rava, but we learned in Evo Rabasi that the only time that they shouldn't interact with one another is when they were divorced from Nisuin. But in this case over here, they were divorced from Erusin. Why do you feel the need for an intermediary? Unrelated to which Rava responded, Kachazinan de Kagaisi Behadadi. I see from the way that they interact with each other that they are very familiar with one another. In other words, that I feel that there's a heightened level of familiarity. Perhaps there was intimacy during Erusin, and therefore it's only appropriate that a shaliach, that some type of intermediary, be established to take care of this transaction. So the Gemara says, Kachazin de Kagaisi Behadadi. Ika da Amri, others explain, have a different version of this story. Lo uki Rava Shliach Bein Sayu. That when this ex-husband and ex-wife came before Rava, Rava did not establish an intermediary between them. Amrali Rava de Bar Masna, Neko Mashlucha Bein Sayu. So Vachem de Bar Masna asked the question on Rava, why did you not establish an intermediary between them? Amrali Vaharav Nachman Tanabe Evo Rabasi. So Rava responded, because Rav Nachman explained in Evor Abasi that the only time you have to be choshish for intimacy is when they were divorced from Nisuin. But this couple was divorced from Erusin. Amar Leit, which Rav Ada Bar Masna responded, Hani mi lehecha de lo gaisi bahadadi. That's only true when you see they're not familiar with each other. However, Hani koi chazina de ka gaisi bahadadi. But these two, they look a little bit too familiar with each other. And therefore, again, you should establish a intermediary between them. So both say, as I said before, we will come to this sugya a little bit more in depth in Gittin, but this is an interesting sugya that has many contemporary ramifications for divorce. Because clearly what the halacha is saying is, if Kohen divorces his wife, they should not live in the same neighborhood, and as much as not even the same mavoi, which seems to be even closer proximity or even further. We'll have to see what a mavoi means. But we have, and then if Yisrael divorces his wife, no problem living in proximity, but when she remarries, she should not live in the same neighborhood as he does. Now obviously both that this has many contemporary ramifications, especially in cases of shared custody, where you have a couple ultimately, again, who has children together, and by definition, you want parents to live in close proximity to each other. So, Amir Hashem, you'll file it, we'll get to it, we'll spend a lot of time in the sugya and gittin. But now, at least you have familiarity with this halacha. Says the Mishnah, Ve'ilu Ne'eman, and I will say, of course, it goes without saying, that Lemaisa, from the Mishnah, we learn that a husband is not believed to testify that his wife was not violated by captors during the siege, during a time that the city was occupied by soldiers, because the husband's testimony about the woman, in essence, is no different than the woman's testimony about herself, which we established yesterday, is not enough to establish her claim. Says the Mishnah. And this is very interesting halacha. These are the situations in which a person is believed to testify in his adult life about things that he saw during his childhood. But I will say, under normal circumstances, we do not lend much credence to things that you testify that you saw about in your childhood. Because anything you see as a child, by definition, children are not fit for edus. So to testify about something you saw in your childhood doesn't really seem to hold all that much water, except in specific cases. So what are they? Ne'eman adam lomar zek sav yado shel abba. A person is believed to say, this is my father's handwriting. V'zek sav yado shel rebbe. And this is the handwriting of my rebbe. So this would be a case, let's say, where a person, Rashi says, over zek sav yado shel abba, or mekaymen ashtar al piv, af api shemis aved ba'od zekaton. Again, let's say Reuven comes along and says, Yaakov, his father was signed on a shtar. So they call Reuven. Reuven, do you recognize your father's handwriting? And Reuven says, yes. The only issue is Yaakov died when Reuven was still a child, which means Reuven never saw his father's signature in his adult life. He remembers his father's signature from his childhood. So yet he's still believed to say that. Similarly, again, he's permitted to go out and testify that this is his Rebbe's signature. This is the signature of my brother. Again, Rabbi says, so all of these are situations where he's testifying about things that he saw in his childhood. Or another thing that he's believed, Zachara Yisi Baplonis, Sheyatza Behinuma. I remember that Plonis, when she got married, she went out in Hinuma. Rabbi, remember what Hinuma is? Good. One of two possibilities. Right? Either, again, the very thick veil that she could doze behind, or the chuppah, the circular chuppah made out of myrtle branches. But the point over here is, it was only something used for a besula. So I remember that when her wedding, she went on a hinuma, verosha parua, and her hair was uncovered, which were signs that she was a besula. Vishahaya ish ploni yotzi in beis hasefer, litpa lecha v'truma. And I remember when we were kids, that my friend, Chaim Yankel, always used to leave yeshiva to go to the mikvah and eat truma. And I remember again, I remember this particular person that always used to stand in line with us by the granary to get his truma. So once I remember, he has childhood recollections that so-and-so was a kohen. And I remember that this place was a beis pras. Rabbi said, beis pras is a field in which there was a grave, and the grave was plowed over. So a person is permitted to testify that in my childhood, I know that this was a grave. I know this was a grave, and ultimately was plowed over. Furthermore, va'ad kani nubon b'shabbos. So a person is permitted to testify that I remember as a child, this is where we were permitted to walk until on Shabbos. In other words, that this was the tchum. A person is permitted to say, I remember that this was the tchum. Aval in adam ne'emar lomar derech haya ploni b'makom hazeh. I must listen to this. But a person is not permitted to say, that I remember as a child that Ploni had rites of passage in this place. In other words, what he's essentially saying is that I remember that Ploni had ownership over this land. You see, he's not believed to say that. Why not? Look at Rashi. Here's the difference. If I say I remember that Reuven had rites of passage in this place, what I am doing is I am placing that property in Reuven's possession. That is monetary testimony. Once you get into the realm of monetary testimony, then what? Then Lamaisa, you need regular edus. So first of all, Rashi just preempts the question. Rashi says, but 1 second, if I testify that as a child I remember that Plonis went out with a hinuma, then that's also monetary testimony. Why? Because I'm saying that she's entitled to a ksuva of 200 zuz. So Rashi proactively addresses this question. He says, that's not a problem. Ksuva, haynu tama derov nashim besulos nisos. No, there it's different, because there we have a rove. The majority of marriages are first marriages. Therefore, again, all I'm doing is my testimony is simply supporting a rove that already exists. Furthermore, or derech hayil ploni makom hazeh, ma'amad u'mispeid hayil ploni makom hazeh. Or I remember that Ploni, whenever he lost a relative, he would always go ahead and do ma'amad u'mispeid. So remember from our moed cotton days, that the way they used to do levayas was they would escort the aron and they would do ma'amados. They would do steps. We still do this today, but in a different form. They would stop on the way to the cemetery, and every stop they would sit down and they would do a spadim. So the person says, I remember as a child that Ploni would always sit down and eulogize his family in this spot. This was their family eulogizing spot. It's good to have, right? A family eulogizing spot. Now that's essentially the same case as before. Namely, what you're doing is you are placing that property in his possession. So that the person is not believed because that already is monetary testimony. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna bar Rabbi Yeshua, Fahu sheyesh gadol imo. Now, we'll say, now understand, Rav Huna qualifies, it's very important. Because from the Mishnah, the way you would read this, let's go back to the first cases. The Mishnah lists a number of cases where a person is believed to testify as an adult about events that he saw as a child. But however, the Gemara says, when is that true? That's only true where there is another adult testifying with him. So we'll say, remember, in all of these cases, he's not testifying as an individual. He's testifying as one of a testimonial unit. The other adult has to have witnessed whatever it is in his adult life. The chiddush over here is that one of the witnesses can be a witness based on what? That which he observed in his childhood. But you still need a testimonial unit of two witnesses. Says the Gemara Utsvicha. Rabbi said, now the Gemara is going to ask, why do I need all of these cases? Remember, in the first case, we said that a person, an adult, is permitted to testify about the fact that he remembers from his childhood the signature of his father, his Rebbe, and his brother. Why do I need all those cases? So I would have said the reason why a child is permitted to testify about the signature of his father, right, is because why? Because he sees it all the time, right? He lives in his house, he sees his father's signature. So I trust the fact that even though he saw this in his childhood, I testify that I believe that he's testifying correctly. Aval Rabbo, lo, but his Rebbe, who should say that? Who says that he's so familiar with his Rebbe's signature? V'yashmo inan rabo mishum de islay im sod rabbe ava aviv lo. On the other hand, if would have just said his Rebbe, I would have said because a person would never lie about knowing the signature of his Rebbe. Why rabo say? Because a person has a fear, not really a fear, but a reverence or an awe for his Rebbe, and he's never going to lie about something that has to do with his Rebbe. But with his father, perhaps a person doesn't have the same level of reverence. Therefore, maybe a person is not as sure about the signature. V'yashmo inan hanitarti aviv de. And if it would have just said that a person is believed to testify about the signature of his father, because again he lives with his father, and about the signature of his Rebbe, because he has reverence for his Rebbe, he's not going to lie. But with his brother's signature, where again he's not necessarily around his brother as much, it could be a significantly older brother, and there's not necessarily that same reverence for his brother, perhaps he should not be believed to testify about the signature of his brother. Kamash malon, kashal, that's not the case. Kevan dekim shtaris midirabanon, heminihu rabanon midirabanon. Therefore, the chiddush is what they're both saying. Since, again, the kiyum shtaros is dirabanan, therefore, again, the rabbis believed this testimony of an adult of things that he witnessed during his childhood. Now, saying, look at this Rashi. It's a very important Rashi. Kiyum shtaros midirabanon. Midaraisa lo ba'ino kiyum shtaros. It's very important. Midaraisa, you do not need to certify a shtar. Why? The amareish lakish. We learn this. When you have a signed shtar, that stands on its own. That stands on its own, which of course makes sense to a certain degree. It's a rabbinic obligation or a rabbinic need for kiyum shtaros. So because kiyum shtaros is the rabbanon, therefore we'll say, we see this all the time, that whenever the rabbis create halacha, they have the ability also to create the parameters of that halacha. Therefore, because they created kiyum shtaros, they have the ability to say that a person, an adult, is permitted to testify that he recognizes signatures from his childhood. But obviously, it's not going to be any signatures. Essentially, it's going to be limited to family and to his Rebbe. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara goes weiter. Zachar hayisi beplonis shiatsa behenu av rosha parua. So we'll say a person is permitted to say as an adult, I remember as a child that so-and-so went out with a hinuma and her hair was uncovered. She was a basula when she got married. So my time, what's the reason for this? Meaning, why do we believe a child? I say we believe a child's testimony. But again, you understand, he's not testifying about this as a child. He's giving this testimony once he's already an adult. But nevertheless, it is based on events that he observed as a child. Why do we believe him? Kevan de Rav Nashim Besulos Nisos Gilui Milsa Ba'amuhu. This is what Rashi said before. Because since the majority of women, when they get married, are Besulos, therefore Lamaisa, again, all this Eidos is really doing is confirming pretty much that which we already know, the Rov, the majority. Therefore, again, we believe it. So the Gemara goes like, V'shahaya ish ploni, yotzim beis ha-sefer le'echol, litpov of le'echol, and this is very interesting. So now what happens? So I show up in Beis, and I say, I remember that when I was a kid, Reuven's father would always show up to yeshiva, right? And what happens? And he would leave yeshiva to go to the mikvah and eat truma. Okay, go to the Mikvani Truma. So let's say, essentially what I'm doing is, I'm testifying that, essentially, my evidence saying that Reuven is a Kohen. So the Gemara says, V'dilma Eved Kohen Hu. Well, how do you know that Reuven was a Kohen? Maybe Reuven was the Eved of a Kohen. Because we'll say, you know, the halach is that what? That the Eved of a Kohen is permitted to eat Truma as well. To which the Gemara says, Misayele Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. So this would support the view of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Dam Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Asr la'adam shi'elame des avdo Torah. Oh, because also remember, my childhood recollection is of what? We were in yeshiva, and Reuven was taken out of yeshiva. So this seems to support the view of Rabbi Shimon Levi. Rabbi Shimon Levi says, it is usur to teach your Eved Torah. So therefore what? If it was an Eved, he wouldn't have been where? He wouldn't have been in yeshiva. So the Gemara says, Velo, is that true? It's not permitted to teach your Eved Torah. Vatanya, but we learned. Now, we'll say, now remember, understand, this is not necessarily specific to Avadim. There is a prohibition on teaching non-Jews Torah. There's a prohibition. In fact, again, what that means is you cannot set up a chavrusa with your Gentile neighbor in... Now, there's an interesting discussion about how far this extends. According to many opinions, it's only Torah Shebichsav, not Torah Shebal Peh. Right? That you can't teach them. You can't teach non-Jews. So any Gemara, Mishnah. But you can absolutely learn Torah Shebichsav. You can set up a chavrusa in Chumash if you want. Because Lamaisa, again, remember, Gentiles are also governed by that which is written in the Chumash. So this is, again, not our topic for you. This is a much bigger discussion about the Isra of Talmud Torah for Nachrim. But again, so what's interesting is even though an Eved is an interesting state of being kind of like quasi-Jewish, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi still says the prohibition applies to Avadim. Therefore, again, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the reason why this works is because there's no way that an Eved would be in yeshiva. So is that true that you can't teach Avadim Torah? V'atanya, but we learned. Love him and a rabbi. Osha asar rabbi apachopa. So also, if you borrowed money from your Eved, now this is an interesting case. Now you could borrow, your Eved technically could own property independent of you. Now, although we say, Masha kana Eved kana rabbi, whatever an Eved acquires, that's only true for property that he acquires when he's an Eved. But for example, if he had accounts prior to becoming an Eved, those are his. Those are his. The master does not have any rights over that. So let's say I borrowed money from my Eved, or I made my Eved an apotropos, right? I went ahead and I made him the executor of my estate. But let's say I'm alive. I don't know what a trustee? Sure. Good, I made him a trustee over my estate. Oshe niach tefillin b'fnei rabo, or my servant put on tefillin in front of me. Oshe karish shlosha psukim b'saknesses, or my eved read 3 psukim from the Torah in shul. Hare ze lo yotze l'chirus. The rabbi said, now the point over here is, all of these acts are not a demonstration of freedom. That even though he did these things, which look like the acts of free men, borrowing from someone, making someone a trustee over my estate, putting on tefillin, which an Eved does not have an obligation to do, or reading 3 psukim, these are not demonstrations of chirus. He's still an Eved. Rashi says, lo yatzal chirus v'lo amridon, ilav d'shachrere lo hava yazif minei, v'lo hava shavach le'linog minog kein b'nei chor, m'shamina minog di'esh Eved shalom Torah. So we don't automatically say that since the other one is letting him do this, that's a telltale sign that the Eved is free. Now, for our purposes, why is this important? This is important because what do you see? The Eved is reading 3 psukim from the Torah, which is what? The Eved is learning. So you see from that an Eved does learn Torah, or I should say an Eved can learn Torah. To which the Gemara says, no, there's a major distinction. Hasam de ikri Eved mi da'ato. Ki amrinan de chinoig be minag banim. No, there's a big distinction. If the Eved wants to learn Torah on his own, that's his decision. He can do whatever he wants. The case of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says is that people did not enroll their Avadim in yeshiva. I mean, I will say, who would take on an extra tuition for their Eved? I mean, come on, this is logical, right? So this isn't a financial issue here. So the idea over here is, what Rabbi Shimon Levi says is that people did not enroll their Avadim in yeshiva. Okay, a person, the Eved wanted to learn Torah, a person even wanted to teach the Eved a little bit of Torah, that's fine. But to enroll your Eved in yeshiva like you would your own child, that people did not do. Therefore, when this adult reminisces and said, when I was a child, Reuven was in yeshiva with me, and his father took him out to go ahead and go to the mikvah to eat truma, that is enough testimony to confirm that he is a Kohen, because no one would have enrolled their Eved, even though an Eved, again, technically can learn, and certainly does eat truma, but the Eved would not be enrolled in yeshiva. Therefore, this testimony would be enough to go ahead and confirm that he is, in fact, a Kohen. But so the Gemara goes weiter. Litbal lecha b'truma, b'truma d'rabban. Now we're talking about over here. The Gemara just qualifies this with truma d'rabban. And Rashi says, "Kigon trumas chutz la'aretz operus." Oberus amnu lahani lachilapi. And I will say, all the Gemara is qualifying over is, remember, you see a common theme developing, which is, when do we believe an adult to testify about events that he saw in his childhood? What does that work for? Only rabbinic matters. Only rabbinic matters. So you see this theme developing over here. So he's believed regarding Kiyum Shtaros, because Kiyum Shtaros is Dirabanon. He's believed to go ahead and say that someone could eat Truma. What kind of Truma? Truma Dirabanon. And he's, and I remember that again, he used to stand in line with us to receive his Truma from the greenery. V'dilma Eved Kohenu. Hold on a second. Again, well, maybe he's an Eved, right? Who's to say, why does that testimony automatically mean that he's a Kohen? Perhaps all it means is that he's an Eved, to which the Gemara says, Tanan kiman da amra in cholkin truma li eved ela imkin rabo imo. This supports the opinion of the imam d'amra, who says that we do not go ahead and give truma to an Eved, unless, of course, his master is with him. Rabo said, we learned this before. Remember again, because what's the concern? The concern is that if people get used to giving him truma without his master present, people may think that what? That he's a Kohen and not an Eved, which of course, again, could cause major problems. Disanya, ein cholkin truma li eved ela imkin rabo imo, div Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda holds that you may not go out and distribute truma to an Eved, unless, of course, his master is with him. Rabbi Yossi says, Yochol, you can give truma to the Eved even if his master is not there. Why? Shiomar, because the Eved could say like this, Im Kohen ani tnuli b'shvilatzmi, if I'm a Kohen, then give me my truma because I deserve it. Im Eved Kohen ani, and if I'm an Eved of a Kohen, tnuli b'shvil Rabbi, then ultimately give me on account of my master. So Rabbi Huda says you can't give truma to an Eved without his master present. Rabbi Yossi says you absolutely can. Now the Gemara says, what's the underlying machlokas over here? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. So in the locale of Rabbi Yehuda, they would go ahead and they would say that if you're a truma eater, that's enough of an attestation to your yichus. So if you were eating truma, they would establish your yichus based on truma consumption. Therefore, on the same Rabbi Yehuda says that what? That you cannot give truma to an Eved without his master present. Why? Because if people see him eating truma, they're going to assume that what? That he's a kohen miyuchas. On the other hand, in the locale of Rabbi Yossi, they did not say that just because you're eating truma, that establishes your yichus. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi doesn't really care if the Eved gets truma with his master or without his master. Either way, truma was not a proof to yuchsin. So also we had this before. Tanya, we lived in a brisa. I'm Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi. Miyamai lohei adati. You know, I never testify anymore. I never testify about anything anymore. You know why? Because pam achas hey adati vehe elu ever lakuna api. Because the one time I gave testimony, it was erroneous testimony, and they made an eved a kohen based on my testimony. So Gemara says, whoa. So the Gemara says, helu sagadaitcha. Could that be that through his testimony they actually made an eved a kohen? Hashta uma behemtan shel sadikim in hakadosh baruch hu mivit hakala al yadam. We saw this sugi before. I remember we spoke about this case about the donkey. The donkey. I don't remember whose donkey it was. Rashi quoted over here. So right, Rashi quotes over from the Gemara in Chulin that the donkey of Rav Pinchas ben Yair would not even eat untithed produce. So if the donkey, if the animals of tzaddikim, so negative things, averos don't happen through them, so tzaddikim all the more. So how could it be then that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is saying that through his testimony they established an eved as a kohen? Ela bikshu lahalos eved lakuna api. Rather, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is saying that one time they were ready to go ahead and make an Eved into a coin based on my testimony. So we'll say, what happened? Chaza ba'asred Rabbi Yossi, va'azal va'ahsid ba'asred Rabbi Yehuda. Because one time Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi saw a man eating truma in the locale of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, remember, in Rabbi Yossi's city, so who ate truma? Who ate, well, obviously everybody, right? Kohanim, Avadim of Kohanim, and not only that, but in the city of Rabbi Yossi, they would give truma even to who? Even to an Eved, not in the presence of his master. Because why? Because in the city of Rabbi Yossi, they did not say that just because you ate truma, that established a yichus. And what happened? Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi then went to the city of Rabbi Yehuda, and he gave testimony about this man in the city of Rabbi Yehuda. What was the testimony? The testimony was, I saw this man eating truma by himself. Oh, he eating truma by himself. Then what does that mean? That he's a Kohen. And remember, again, in the city of Rabbi Yehuda, so truma consumption does, in fact, attest to yichus. Rabbi Yossi says, I don't give testimony anymore because I almost got myself into some significant trouble because of the different customs in these two different cities. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. V'shamakom hazeh beis hapras. And remember again, a person is believed, the katan is believed to say that I remember from my childhood that this field was a beis hapras. So my time, what's the reason why he's believed? Beis hapras drabana. Because they both say the whole notion of a, now remember, the idea over here is this is a field in which there was a grave and the grave was plowed over. So the whole issue over here is a rabbinic one. Because remember, the assumption is biblically, if you have a grave and the grave was plowed over, we assume that biblically you don't have a problem. Why not? And we'll discuss why not in just a moment. It's only a rabbinic issue. And the truth is, even the rabbinic issue could be dealt with very easily, which is how. Just have to blow on the dirt before you take a step. And if there are any bone fragments, you'll see them and you'll step around them. In reality, once you have a field that was plowed over, that had a grave in it, it's tar. Why? My time. I remember, bone fragments only go ahead and convey tuma if what? They're the size of a barley kernel. Once a grave has been plowed over, especially if the area has been traversed by pedestrian traffic, the assumption is whatever bone fragments are there have been smashed and are usually less than the size of a barley kernel. Because of that, there's no real biblical issue over here. We only have a rabbinic issue over here. And therefore, again, once same theme. Because it's a rabbinic issue, therefore the katan is believed to go ahead and give this testimony. Let's just go a little bit weiter. Va'ad kan. So an adult is permitted to say, I remember as a child, this was the end of the Tchum Shabbos. Why? Because ultimately, again, he is because we hold that Tchum HaDrabanan, the concept of Tchum Shabbos boundary is Drabanan. Therefore, the Katan is believed to testify about rabbinic ideas. Again, but remember, the Katan is not believed to say that so-and-so, Reuven had rights of way in this area, or that he had a dedicated eulogizing spot for his family over here, which would essentially be establishing property in his possession. My time, why is the katan not believed in this case? Remember, when I say katan, I'm saying adult who's testifying about events that he saw as a katan. My time, afuki mamona lo mafkinon. Because again, Abba say we believe him in all types of rabbinic matters, but we don't believe him in terms of what? We don't believe him in terms of monetary issues. We do not believe him to go ahead and remove property from one and give it to the other. So a tinok, a child, is believed to say, my father told me that this family is tame. So the Gemara says, Tahora tameya sakadetcha. What does that mean? Tahora tameya. Ella mishpacha zuksheira or mishpacha zupsula. Rather, a child is believed to say an adult is believed to say that as a child, my father told me this family was kosher and this family was pasul. V'sha'achalnu b'ketzatza shabas ploni l'ploni, and that we ate of the ketzatza of so-and-so, bas ploni, when she married ploni, we'll see what that means. V'sha'ayinu molichim chalu matronos l'ploni kohen, ayde atzmo. Avalo ayde acher, and I were, those believed to say that I used to go ahead and take chalo and other matnos kuna to so-and-so, which is also a testament to the fact that he's a kohen, but he's only permitted, the child is only believed if what? If he delivered it himself. If he's saying, I delivered it myself, my father sent me, and he's not believed to testify that somebody else took it. The kulanim haya oved kochavim in iskayir evav in ishtachar ein ne'emanin. But ultimately, again, all of this is only so if what? If the kulanim haya oved kochavim, if he was an oved kochavim and he converted, or he was an eved and he was emancipated, so an oved kochavim is not believed to go ahead and testify about things that he saw as an oved kochavim, and an eved is not believed to testify about things that he saw as an eved. Ve'ein ne'eman lomar derech hayu l'ponim ha'makom hazeh, ma'amaru mispid hayu l'ponim ha'makom hazeh. And I will say, a person is not believed to say that Ploni had rights of passage through this place, or had a dedicated eulogizing spot in this place, because again, that's monetary issues. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka omer ne'eman. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka said they are believed. Rabbi Yochanan, we'll stop over here. We're going to pick up with Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. I know we're stopping right in the middle, but we'll have to stop. We'll pick up with Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, Mirat Hashem, tomorrow. I'm sorry? Short.